Viewpoint on Mormonism, the program that examines the teachings of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from a biblical perspective. Viewpoint on Mormonism is sponsored by Mormonism Research Ministry. Since 1979, Mormonism Research Ministry has been dedicated to equipping the body of Christ with answers regarding the Christian faith in a manner that expresses gentleness and respect. And now, your host for today's Viewpoint on Mormonism.
Welcome to this edition of Viewpoint on Mormonism. I'm your host, Bill McKeever, founder and director of Mormonism Research Ministry. With me today is Eric Johnson, my colleague at MRM. We are continuing to look at the early days of Mormon history, going through a book titled Mormon Enigma, Emma Hale Smith, written by Linda King Newell and Valene Tippetts Avery, two Mormon authors. A book that we need to mention did receive an award from Brigham Young University. However, because of its controversial nature, the two authors were not allowed to talk about the book in an LDS church setting for a period of time. The book is quite fascinating, and as we have said a number of times, it's because they do contain a lot of information that I think a lot of Mormons would probably find not only embarrassing, but actually appalling.
Yeah.
When they look at the behavior of their founding prophet. It's a side of Joseph Smith that you're not going to find in correlated manuals produced by the LDS Church. The LDS Church just does not do that.
It's not faith promoting.
It's not faith promoting. We ended our broadcast yesterday talking about the Hans Mill Massacre and how the Hans Mill Massacre that was perpetrated upon the Mormons, and in that massacre, a number of Mormons were killed, including two small boys. Whenever the Mormons talk about the persecution period, they always want to mention Hans Mill. But the problem is they fail to give a complete picture of the events that led up to Hans Mill. And of course, you cannot do that without mentioning the Battle of Crooked River. Mm. The killing of a Missouri militiaman and the mutilation, the facial mutilation, of another Missouri militiaman by the name of Samuel Tarwater. So as a result of this, the Missourians are now really putting the heat on the Mormons. And we find on page 74 where our two authors talk about what happened after the Hans Mill massacre.
It says, Emma heard of outrages at Hans Mill as the survivors straggled onto Far West, numb with shock and fear. The same day that the Hans Mill massacre erupted, scouts reported that an army was marching toward Far West. 2,000 armed men milled in the flat, bent on killing the Mormons who spent a sleepless night. Rather than take up arms, some Mormon men quietly disappeared. They were regarded as cowards, but they believed they had preached moderation and could not make themselves heard. The next day, 1,500 reinforcements arrived for the Missouri troops. Besieged and outnumbered, Joseph decided to surrender. Toward evening, October 31st, Emma kissed him goodbye. Then he, Sidney Rigdon, and Pardley P. Pratt walked out with the flag of truce. They were immediately surrounded and taken prisoner. The mob now had its pawns. A court-martial deliberated through the evening. Its decision, handed to Brigadier General Alexander W. Donovan, read, Sir, you will take Joseph Smith and the other prisoners into the public square of Far West and shoot them at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. Signed, Samuel D. Lucas, Major General Commanding.
Now, we need to bring this out, that Alexander Donovan has actually become a hero in the eyes of the Mormon people because he refused to follow through with that order to execute Joseph Smith the next day. The Mormons do talk very highly of Donovan, as I would say they should, because to us looking backwards from a 21st century vantage point, which is not a very good vantage point because we're certainly isolated from all the things that have been going on at this time, I would say that his execution would probably be problematic in a court of law.
Yeah.
Aren't the Mormons always telling us that there was an order that you could kill Mormons at any time?
Yeah.
So what's the big deal? Why didn't they just shoot him and get it over with?
Obviously,
there were some people who didn't feel that way.
Well, that's a really good point, because that's how we're supposed to believe the extermination order. If you listen to the Manti, the Mormon Miracle Pageant in Manti, that's how they portray it as, just whenever you find one, just shoot him. Well, the leader here would have been easy to have shot. Let me just say this, though. Shooting him would not have resulted in a positive ending. I mean, I think just like he was killed in 1844, so he does live another 5 years, killing Joseph Smith wasn't going to be the end of this movement. And I don't think it would have been the end of this movement here. And in fact, he would have been even more so of a martyr because he hasn't had a full chance to do all of his polygamous ways and some of the things that he said that really angered people. Here, he would have been seen as being a martyr. And I'm sure a guy like Brigham Young or Sidney Rigdon or somebody else would have taken up from where he left off.
According to the authors, on page 74, they say Doniphan refused to execute the command. In a terse note to his superior officer, he stated, "It is cold-blooded murder. I will not obey your order. My brigade shall march for liberty tomorrow at 8 o'clock, and if you execute these men, I will hold you responsible before an earthly tribunal, so help me God." Now, that statement alone makes me think that the way the extermination order is interpreted by Mormons today was probably not the way it was interpreted back then. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not saying that there's not a lot of controversy over this extermination order. There certainly is. But Doniphan doesn't seem to think that it is a license to kill.
Nope.
Okay, he certainly doesn't see that. And so he refuses to kill Joseph Smith. What happens is Joseph Smith is taken into custody, and he ends up being put into a man's care by the name of General Moses Wilson. Now, this paragraph that the authors put in there, I find is kind of interesting. It says, "Joseph was in General Moses Wilson's care during the march toward independence. He protected Joseph from lynching, but soon learned he had an unusual man in his charge." This is a quotation. "I carried him into my house, a prisoner in chains, and in less than 2 hours, my wife loved him better than she did me," Wilson reported.
Wow.
That's an odd statement.
In 2 hours,
in
Joseph
two
Smith.
In 2 hours. I mean, this just leaves the mind to really wonder, and what in the world did Joseph Smith do that he would take this man's wife and turn her towards him where he would make a comment like that?
Or maybe this guy was just so insecure that he just thought that that was the way it was.
Well, to cover a lot of ground, eventually on November 30th, and some historians say that it was actually December 1st, uh-huh. So there's a day discrepancy there. But eventually Joseph and five fellow prisoners are going to enter Liberty Jail. Liberty Jail is located 25 miles to the west of Richmond in Clay County. Now, you and I have been to Liberty Jail.
We have.
We've had some very pleasant talks with the missionaries that are there. But one thing that we found in the talks that they gave us, they, again, leave out a lot of the pertinent information. And they give the impression that Joseph Smith was incarcerated at Liberty Jail for no apparent reason.
If you knew no better, you would think that as you walked out.
Well, when we were told by the tour guide that we had on one of our tours, I asked him, well, where are you getting that? Because there were a lot of events that led to his incarceration at Liberty Jail. To say that it was for really no apparent reason is quite a stretch. You might assume that Smith was innocent of some of the charges, but to say it was for no apparent reason, I don't think that's really telling the truth. Because remember, Smith was behind a lot of the things that were going on. There's something that I think we need to bring out again, and D. Michael Quinn talks about this. He says in his book, The Mormon Hierarchy, Origins of Power, page 101, he says, "Charged with the capital crime of treason, Smith and several other church leaders, most over 6 feet tall, languished in the low-ceiling basement at Liberty Jail for 6 months. Although the prophet had encouraged, listen carefully, although the prophet had encouraged, approved, and directed the Danites during the summer and fall of 1838, mm-hmm. Smith publicly repudiated them after Danite General Samson Avard testified against him in open court." Now, a lot of Mormons that I've talked to about the Danite situation, which were, as we said before, kind of like the Mormon hitmen that were involved in these retaliatory strikes against the Missourians, they were Danites, and they were under the orders of Joseph Smith. Now, they will say, but Joseph Smith didn't approve of a lot of things that they did. They're probably right on that, but we don't know specifically what he did approve and what he didn't approve. We do know, however, he finally repudiates the group later on after Avard testifies against him. And Mormons somehow take that as some kind of blanket repudiation for their entire existence. Mm. I don't think that's a fair appraisal of the situation. Quinn goes on to say that after Smith's escape from the Missouri prison in April of 1839, he inaugurated in Illinois the theocracy which had existed in revelatory embryo for a decade. Now, we first must mention here Smith's escape. Melinda King Newell and Valene Tippetts Avery, they explain this escape in their book. And what do they say about that?
It says on page 82, Joseph explained that the Missourians had decided to set some of the men free and found a most unusual way to do it. During a move to another prison, the sheriff told the astonished prisoners, quote, I'll take a good drink of grog and go to bed, and you may do as you have a mind to, end quote. Three guards slaked their thirst with whiskey and honey, while a fourth saddled the horses for the Mormons. Joseph and Hiram and the others rode off before the guards could change their minds. After 5 months, they were finally free. This is on April 6, 1839. So they
have
been
a significant date in Mormon history.
Yeah, absolutely.
The founding of the church.
1830. So maybe this was an early present for them. Or...
Well, I think we need to mention that because Joseph Smith is telling this story. This is after he appears in Quincy, Illinois, after being allowed to escape. It's not like in the Hollywood movies where he somehow lures a guard towards the bars and knocks him over the head with the butt of a pistol, grabs the keys out of the pocket, unlocks the bars, and then flees on horseback.
Or like Peter being released from prison, you know, with angels coming through.
Right. So he was actually allowed to go free, and he ends up joining his wife in Quincy, Illinois. They will then move to Nauvoo, and this is where really it starts getting dicey, because now, once they get to Nauvoo, polygamy is going to go rampant, and Joseph Smith is going to use his authority to marry a lot of women during that Nauvoo time period. And again, we can only wonder, what was Emma thinking during this time?
And the two-thirds of this last part of the book is all about Nauvoo. So it took us all this time to get to page 83.
So in our next broadcast, we are now in Nauvoo, Illinois.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information regarding Mormonism Research Ministry, we encourage you to visit our website at www.mrm.org, where you can request our free newsletter, Mormonism Researched. We hope you will join us again as we look at another viewpoint on Mormonism. Here's something to think about. Are you confidently prepared to share your faith with your Latter-day Saint friend or acquaintance? Do you feel you have an adequate grasp of Mormon doctrine and history? Well, if not, then we encourage you to attend Mormonism Research Ministries' Compassionate Boldness Symposium coming up on Saturday, July 27th. This four-hour event will take place at the Adventure Church in Draper, Utah. MRM's Bill McKeever and Eric Johnson will focus on such issues such as the Book of Mormon, the Godhead, and salvation. Special emphasis will be made on how to answer LDS proof texts and the questions Mormons may pose. Now again, the event is free and open to the public, so everyone is invited to come. For those who would like to do further research, a book table will also be available. This Compassionate Boldness Symposium will take place starting at 9 a.m. on Saturday, July 27th at the Adventure Church in Draper. Simply take the 123rd South exit off the I-15. The church is located right there at 352 West and 123rd South. We look forward to seeing you there.